With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, we're back. Jason and John, 92.9 FM, ESPN, and as promised, he is the great Stephen A. Smith. He's a host on First Take on ESPN and also hosts the Stephen A. Smith Show, which you can hear, obviously, right here on 790 AM. He joins us now. Stephen A., what's going on, man?
How you guys doing? How's everything?
Everything good. Is good in
Got
Memphis.
Good job, Moran. Feeling pretty good.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. Always.
that's a good reason to feel good.
Yes, sir.
You like some John Moran, huh?
Yeah, the brother can play. There's no question about that. And listen, if you're gonna give up Mike Conley, who just finished averaging 21-6 for you last season, and is one of the steady professionals we've seen at the point guard spot for the last decade, and you're gonna give him up, you know there's got to be this incredibly strong belief in a guy like Ja Morant. Yeah. So I'm happy for the franchise. I'm happy that you got him. You definitely need him. He's a tremendous player. With an incredible upside, we'll see what he's made of.
Do you like the idea of him and sort of Jaren Jackson together? Don't know how high you are on Jaren, too. We know he's got the pedigree, had a great first year. You've been dogging us for a while saying we should be out to Seattle. We going to be okay in Memphis with Jaren and Ja, Stephen A.?
I hope so, but you're absolutely been one of those people that I've had serious questions about whether or not you guys should have an NBA franchise. But it wasn't an indictment of Memphis or
absolutely.
Its fans. It's what I've been told in terms of the kind of money the franchise is making compared to the kind of money it could make if it were elsewhere. So it was strictly business looking at, you know, what kind of profitability the franchise is generating and going from there. Every time I've been in Memphis, you got folks who know the game of basketball, mm-hmm. clearly loves the game of basketball, seems to be more of a college town than anything else in my estimation, but I don't know because I don't live there. I've never lived there. But that's what I deduced from what I was told, and I still am of the belief that if you had an opportunity to have a team in Seattle or Memphis, it should be Seattle. But that doesn't take away from what I feel about the city, its fans, and certainly the fact that you got Ja Morant, and I'm hopeful that he'll come there and put on the kind of show that will make it electric so we could be looking at the Memphis Grizzlies and recognizing the fact that although they missed the playoffs the last 2 years, this is a team that was once in the NBA Conference Finals, in the Western Conference Finals, that was a perennial playoff team led by Gasol and Mike Conley, along with Zach Randolph and others, and you would hope that you guys were able to return to that kind of form.
Brother Smith, I'm with you completely on the fact that I think this was for a long time a college town. There's no question. Even with Penny Hardaway, what he's doing right now, got the number one recruiting class in the country, everyone's excited. But I think you saw it too. It's what that core four did, the seven straight years of playoffs to where, you know, you've got some people in the NBA, at least when it was at its height, saying this was the best home court advantage in the NBA. So we're hopeful, Stephen A., that we can convince you with the superstars coming in, potentially, with Ja and Jaren, that the NBA can see the value again. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you know they're smart basketball fans. You know we're a basketball town. We just got to show you the value.
Well, I'm certainly not rooting against the town or the city.
Absolutely.
I'm just telling you how I feel today. In other words, as it stands today, knowing how basketball crazed the city of Seattle once was, knowing that they would love to have a basketball team again, seeing you know what the Memphis Grizzlies have deteriorated to over the last few years,
they held on
so,
too long.
Hearing about profitability or lack thereof, I think about Seattle more than I think about Memphis. But having said that, I'm certainly not rooting against you, and I certainly won't fail to recognize if there's a turnaround that takes us. As far as I'm concerned, cities could have a franchise. I think it would be great for basketball.
Yep, I think that's absolutely right. All right, Stephen A., some news today. The Lakers now have $32 million in cap space. They clearly are going to try to bring in another max contract guy. Who makes the most sense to you?
Well, first of all, I think to answer the question directly, I think it would be Kyrie Irving, who supposedly, purportedly is going to Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
But regardless of what their differences were personality-wise, on the basketball court, Kyrie and LeBron perfectly complemented one another, and they validated it by capturing a championship. So we can't ignore that. But I will also like to say this. The Lakers don't have to go in that direction.
Right.
The Lakers could choose to go in the direction of a D'Angelo Russell, get him for a bit cheaper. He'd be at least $10 million cheaper than Kyrie, if not more. And you could use those other dollars to add additional parts to the franchise. Because if you got LeBron and you got AD and you got Kyle Kuzma as a third wheel and you were to add D'Angelo Russell to that equation, you could certainly use the extra dollars to add two or three additional players, and that might be a plus instead of adding a third superstar.
What should Danny Ainge do? You've been on him a little bit, and I sort of have too. At least he's missed some of his window. A lot of people, I figure, Boston fans figure they should have been the team that was in the finals. What are they going to do there? Do you take Kemba and you're a good team all of a sudden? What should Ainge do?
Well, first of all, when it comes to Danny Ainge, what I did was recognize the fact that he's been a quality executive in the NBA, and that's not to be ignored.
Yep.
The flip side to it, however, the fact that you got to win it. You got to usually have a superstar. I mean, I think the only team that has won devoid of a superstar, excuse me, in this millennial, has been the Detroit Pistons when they had Tayshaun Prince, your VP of Basketball Affairs. Now, when they had him, they had Chauncey, they had Rasheed Wallace, Benny Wallace, and Rip Hamilton. And so, for me, outside of that, every team that's won a championship had a bona fide superstar and future Hall of Famer on the squad. And if you're the Boston Celtics and you have supplementary parts, the Jason Tatums, Jaylen Browns of the world, Al Horford, Kyrie Irving, et cetera, at least at one time, along with a Gordon Hayward, a Terry Rozier, a Marcus Smart, you've got to find a way to parlay that into acquiring
a
superstar.
Yes.
And if you can't do that, it begs the question as to why that is. Now you're going to have a plethora of stars that don't want to come play in Boston. They don't want to be in Northeast. They don't want to be in that cold weather, certainly in Boston and all of this other stuff. That might be true, or it might be that he hasn't really been able to recruit since Doc Rivers has left, and even before then. Remember, when he had the big three with KG, Ray Allen, Paul Pierce, the real acquisition was KG. What happened with that? One of his great, great friends and former championship teammate, Kevin McHale, who was running the Minnesota Timberwolves, gift-wrapped that pick or that deal to Danny Ainge. Outside of that, what real deal has he made? The real deal he made was hoodwinking the Brooklyn Nets and then GM Billy King into trading for Paul Pierce and KG, because Danny Ainge knew that Billy King was under pressure by the Russian owner Prokhorov to make the deal, because Prokhorov wanted to be an instant sensation in New York because he saw vulnerability on the part of the New York Knicks in Midtown Manhattan. So he said, let's get it now. Let's add KG and Paul Pierce to the mix, to the equation. Let's do something big since we're just opening up in the Barclays Center. Let's do it that way and force Billy King to make that thing, mortgaging their future with three basically first-round picks. So those are the kind of things that happen. Those are the two things that happened to Danny Ainge's benefit. Nothing else of real note he did. Brad Stevens, big-time acquisition in terms of acquiring him as a coach out of Butler, because nobody saw that coming.
Right.
And Brad Stevens was ultimately what enabled you to get Gordon Hayward to leave Utah. Mm-hmm. Now, we know Gordon Hayward had an ugly injury, but before the ugly injury, he was every bit worth the $131 million contract that Danny Ainge and the Boston Celtics signed him to. But that was because of his relationship with Brad Stevens. What has Danny Ainge done himself to make Boston an attractive landing spot for a marquee free agent? I think that's the one blemish on his career as an executive that should be asked to know and basically publicized.
I think you're right.
We are, of course, talking to Stephen A. Smith, host of First Take on ESPN. Andre Iguodala, who has a new book out, is making the rounds in the media, and he said in an interview that the Knicks aren't getting anybody, Stephen A. Will he be proven right?
It looks that way. And don't get me started on how depressed that would make me, because I'm a native New Yorker and a lifelong Knicks fan. So I'm taking Prozac for depression and all of that stuff. Well, I'm about to anyway. I'm only playing, but I do feel seriously depressed. I will tell you that we're hearing, you know, KD and Kyrie going to Brooklyn, Kemba Walker going to the Boston Celtics. If Danny Ainge, I just finished talking about Danny Ainge, but if he gets Kemba Walker to come to Boston, I think that would be a huge plus on this side, because if you want to succeed Kyrie Irving, I don't know of anybody closer in the league talent-wise in terms of mirroring the talent of Kyrie Irving better than Kemba Walker, who just finished averaging 25 a game, and is willing to take about $21 million less or $20 million less from Boston rather than Charlotte. Charlotte wasn't willing to trigger a luxury tax. Kemba Walker said as a result he wants to go someplace else, he wants to win, and he's willing to go to Boston rather than stay in Charlotte. So that's your situation there. Al Horford's going to go to Dallas in all likelihood to play with the Mavs with Porzingis and Doncic. Mm-hmm. You know, you got all of this stuff going on. And so when you look at it from that perspective, you're the New York Knicks, you end up empty-handed with over $70 million in cap space.
Lord.
Over $70 million in cap space with absolutely nothing to show for it except potentially Boogie Cousins. And you're going to wonder why I'm depressed. Is your answer.
Exactly. Stephen, I got a sort of off-the-beaten-path question for you. You've had a couple partners on First Take now, obviously Skip and now Max. Me and my partner here are doing this show locally every day. We're going into our fourth year doing this. Would you say that you're friends with your partner? Do you think it's important to be friends with your partner? And I mean in the sense not that it's friendly, but that you see each other outside of work hours. Is there value in that to you?
Might be valuing it to me, I don't know, because I wouldn't classify Max and I in that category. I've got profound respect for him. I like him a great deal because he's a really, really nice guy. But we don't necessarily hang together outside of studio. But I got news for you. Skip is my brother. I mean, Skip Bayless and I are pretty damn tight, and we almost never hang out together. We almost never hung out together. Yeah. When we were on First Take together, Skip Bayless and I might have gone out three times in about 5 years. So that's just not – so I wouldn't tell you that it's necessary for on-air chemistry. One could argue that it helps. But I don't think it's necessary. I think if you're authentic and true to who you are and there's an understanding from both parties as to who the other is, I think that's the most important thing. And the most important thing is exhibiting and displaying professional decorum and courtesy and understanding that you're both teammates and operating accordingly. I don't think it's necessary to hang out with one another or actually be friends with one another. Yeah. You just don't need to be enemies.
That makes all the sense of the world. Last thing I got to ask you, Stephen A., and I know every minute of yours is valuable, so I don't think I'll get the chance again. African Americans in the media, we talk about them on the sidelines, right? We need them more in college basketball, more head coaches in the NBA, but in the media as well. How much of it, Stephen, percentage-wise, is the opportunities, right? We've got to get the opportunities. We need those given to us. But also, we got to get us right too, right? We got to be prepared. We got to be right there when that door opens. How much of it is, you know, where's the balance there, Stephen A.? How much more of it is the opportunities got to be there, but we got to be prepared to take them as well?
Well, I don't disagree with you. I just think that's not telling the full story. I think the full story is the absence of diversity in executive positions.
Absolutely.
The fact of the matter is, you know, you can have on-air talent, but the reality of the situation is, you know, you know, people pick, you know, African Americans and minorities to come on the air, and it's always this impression, this interpretation, and it's like a diamond in the rough or something that you know what it's a rarity. When in fact there are a plethora of minorities, both on the male and female side,
killing
that
it.
Can do this job
yes.
and do this job exceptionally well. But the opportunities accorded to us don't necessarily exist compared to our counterparts from white America. That's
Absolutely.
The reality of the situation. You know, you get an opportunity, you don't make the most of it. What kind of chance do you get to redeem yourself and make the most of a second opportunity? Whereas you see others, they constantly get second and third and fourth opportunities. They constantly resurface. Those kind of things do transpire.
Yep.
And when that transpires, it can be very disheartening because you see that the room, you know, for errors, for mistakes are limited compared to what it is for your contemporaries and counterparts. And that's a challenge for a lot of African Americans in particular to settle for. You got to remember, you got to go on the air. You got to have a level head.
Yep.
You got to be disciplined
Can't
and focused.
Off.
And what's the number one thing that can distract you from being those things? You know what it is? Stress.
Absolutely.
Stress. It's one of the major, major killers in our community. Well, what stresses us? Just the mere thought of unfairness, and we didn't even get to the reality of it all.
Yeah.
So definitely is a challenge, but it also helps that when you get that opportunity, you're prepared enough where you're considered pretty damn good at what you do, so it can inspire executives in decision-making positions to open the doors, not just for others in terms of on-air talent, but to also assist in giving black executives, minority executives, an opportunity. And if you're black and you're an on-air talent, you should perform just as diligently,
absolutely,
if not more so, for those who are minorities that are in decision-making positions as you would for white individuals that are in those positions.
Hey, Stephen A., man, this
very
was great.
Very much appreciate this,
we
sir.
We appreciate the time, man.
Thank
Thanks
you, brother.
So much.
Thank y'all. Appreciate y'all having me.
Yes, sir. He is Stephen A. Smith, host of First Take, obviously host of the Stephen A. Smith Show. Interesting stuff from him, as always.
Much like we've said in the sports world, right, where African-American, you've got to have more African-American owners, right, because they're the ones that are going to do the hiring. And what do we say? You're going to hire, like, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing when it comes to media. You've got to have those executives that are willing to make those hires. It's all. We're all trying to get there, you know what I'm saying? But the point is, how do we do that? Well, it's the same thing as in sports. You got to have more of those folks making the decision, the hirings, and that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
He was great to join us.
Yeah.
Great
always,
get, Brad.
I always appreciate Stephen A.'s time.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.